is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Santa Fe, Texas joins a long and growing list of schools that have been silenced, voices that have been silenced, families that have been changed forever. When will the badness end? What's the latest with North Korea, Israel, Gaza, Turkey chimes in. And it's the one-year anniversary for the Mueller investigation. 1 year, and I don't see anybody blowing out candles on this one, friends. Let's get right to the top of the show here and talk about this school massacre here. Lieutenant Joseph Pengero joins us. He's a retired police lieutenant, director of school security. He's a master trainer and the owner of Pengero Training. Dr. Ron Martinelli is here. He's a retired police detective. His background in investigations, forensics, psychological profile, and in human factors, violent crimes, and death scene investigations is why he is often referred to as the expert's expert. Gentlemen, this past Friday marked another day when we awakened to the news of another shooting, this time in Santa Fe, Texas. Well, Santa Fe, Texas is a suburban community not far from Galveston, about 30 miles south of Houston. This time the numbers are 10 dead, including 9 students and 1 adult. It's a pattern that has been building for decades and seems to be getting worse, not better. Well, since 2015, there have been 129 shootings in our schools, leaving 179 people dead, mainly students, but some adults as well, over 140 people injured. You have to start to question not only the cause of these shootings, but what's the answer to stop the violence? So when we look at school violence here, we look at the socioeconomic factors, pop culture, what is it that's taken place here that has changed this paradigm? Because if you go back here, let me give you an example here. Bring it back all the way back to the 1930s during the Great Depression. In that period of 10 years, there were a total of 9 school shootings, leaving 10 people dead and 3 injured. That was for an entire decade now. And the numbers were similar in the 40s and 50s. It wasn't a common occurrence. It was very, very rare. Even into the 80s, nothing really changed. And then things really started to change dramatically by the 90s and have continued an upward trend since then. What do you pin this all on? Lieutenant Joe Pengero, you deal with school security. This is your livelihood. You see what's happening with the schools, with the kids. What do you pin this on?
Well, Malcolm, I think it's pretty clear that the social media is a big part of what's going on, the 24/7 news cycle. There's some indication in the records that these kids that are doing this are seeing other kids do it. They are themselves lost. They have some type of maybe mental conditions that are diagnosed or undiagnosed, and they see other kids moving out in front by doing this. So I think when you have that kind of connection and that observation of what's going on, when you are in a position where you're feeling helpless, angry, whatever these kids are feeling, that now becomes a legitimate option for you to do. And it seems like in this case was just another option that this kid took. It was his turn, and absolutely horrible. I saw a girl from that high school, and she said, I think, the most telling thing of all where we are in the world right now. She said, we saw all these other school shootings, and I just figured it was a matter of time till it happened here.
Right, yeah.
That's amazing.
I did see that. I did see it was very telling. There were a lot of telling things coming out of this. Dr. Ron Martinelli, I hear what Lieutenant Joe says there about this, and it doesn't escape any of us what's happening here with this cultural shift that sort of has happened, that's taken over. He mentions the social media factor. But there's also something else within the media. It seems to get into this culture where it's kind of an in thing. And I have to tell you right now, there are a lot of kids out there right now who believe exactly as that young lady believed that Lieutenant Joe just mentioned, that who believe probably it could and would and may happen at their school. And it, of course, for many people, it's a matter of time before it does happen again. It's what I said after Parkland, that it was a matter of time, unless something was really done to curb this problem, this is going to happen again. Pick that up from there and talk about the factors that are creating this rise in school violence.
Well, sure, and thank you for having me on, Malcolm. You know, I've spoken about this so many times, and you know, in our response to ActiveShooters.com company, we go nationally to schools and corporate America and churches, and we put on this training. And I'm in Texas. And as a matter of fact, this event happened just about 4 hours from me. I'm in outside of San Antonio. And so the components that I discuss in these classes when I unpack this bag is that, first of all, these are mental health issues, and these are behavioral issues. These are not gun issues. The gun is the mechanism of injury, but it's not the item of causation. That's number one. So behavior is very, very important here. And we have to remember that, and you know, one of the things that I heard yesterday that upsetted me is that they come out and they say, well, there were absolutely no red flags, no red flags. Well, let me tell you what, a kid doesn't wake up in the morning, Friday morning, and decide, well, I think I'm going to grab a couple of guns and build some explosive devices, and I'm going to go to my high school, and I'm going to start mass murdering people and set off IEDs. Okay. So this is a planned event. This kid is, you know, a junior. He's 17 years old. There is already evidence that this is a marginalized kid. He was probably bullied by adults in front of others. He's a quiet kid. And he's what I refer to as we move forward on this, as we're going to learn more. And probably the kids closest to him are going to tell us a lot about him. But he's one of these ticking time bombs that I discuss. And so we have a kid that is also now, because what they found in his cell phone and what they found in his own computer was not only homicidal, but suicidal. 40% of all active shooters end their event by self-suicide or suicide by cop. Very few are actually captured, okay? And in this particular case, the only reason why he was captured is at the very end, he changed his mind and he didn't have the guts to kill himself. And these people tend to be cowardly. What this kid is looking for is several things. Number one, I'm going to tell you that if I did a suicide risk assessment on this kid, I would find out that he has a lot of the precursors of suicidal ideation. In other words, he's suicidal and he wants revenge and control over other people. This is a payback. There's six different motives for active shooter: anti-government, anti-religion, the revenge, and another one is going to be terrorism. We know it's not any of those things. I think it's revenge. And then the last one is pure evil. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of components involved with this kid.
Yeah, and this young man, it was a little different with this particular time, guys, because he went ahead, and many of the reports were that he did not want to kill people that he liked or knew. He was very specific and very calculated, as you say. He was very, very calculated. So he specifically targeted, playing off of this bully thing. And that's a big problem out there, is this bullying thing that is happening. Again, when you put this into context like that, Lieutenant Joe, I mean, there are so many people out there, so many kids that are bullied. And the suicide piece as well is another component of this. You've got to remember, suicides are on the rise. Young people, there seems to be a really rash of depression. Unless I'm mistaken here, I'm seeing more and more of this where young people are just depressed. They're depressed about a lot of things, and it really is the fabric, the social cultural fabric out there. Pick it up from there, Lieutenant Joe Pinkero, and tell us a little bit more about, again, looking at this particular incident. I tried to look at this Texas thing and say, okay, what was different about this? There were several things different about this. He had all these explosive devices. Again, a lot of the points that Dr. Ron just made, he was targeting certain people and not others. So there were several things different about this particular case.
There's a bit of differentiation here, and I have to agree with Dr. Ron. These kids do not wake up the morning of the event and decide they're going to do it. We are going to find, as this investigation goes, that some, if not a lot of people, knew that he was troubled and that he was making statements, probably on his social media, to other people. That will come out in the course of the investigation. These kids, lots of them, will be calling out before they take action. And unfortunately, when there is bullying, and we'll find that out in this case, when there is bullying, not every school district does the right thing. They have a lot of lip service for it. They have policy and procedure, but it is still very common for people to not investigate properly and then not take the proper answers. If a kid is getting bullied and he goes to the teacher and says, I'm being bullied, and the teacher doesn't do anything, then he goes to the parents and they complain and the school doesn't do anything and the bullying continues. At some point, that kid has to say, well, no one is helping me. What am I going to do? And the culture now shows them that you can strike back out. You can go out and get a weapon. You can go hurt these people. You can get your revenge. And as Dr. Ron said, the suicidal component is huge in a majority of these incidents. They vent their rage, they vent their pain on whoever it is, and then they take themselves out because it's really an end game for them. They're not taking hostages. They're not asking for pizzas. They're not making a statement. They're going to hurt who they need to hurt. And then really they're hurting so much inside they take themselves out.
Yeah.
So when you look at this bullying, it has to be taken very seriously. Mm-hmm. And if there is no obvious consequence to the bully, then the victim just thinks nothing happens.
Right.
It's all up.
You just said something that was a trigger point for me when you said the culture demands it. They're very interested with the culture, the comment, because see, this is exactly what we're seeing when the culture. And so they have to lash back. And here's the crux of this is it's become acceptable. It's acceptable behavior. I mean, they're not really thinking through. Remember, young minds are not developed fully, first of all. They're still developing at that age. So they're not fully aware of all the factors or the consequences of those factors or what happens with their life and the circumstances around that and, of course, the lives they take. But it's the culture. Here's what I want to talk about a second here. I think the crux of this is the culture, it has become very, very acceptable behavior. And the kids don't really know. This is, again, normal. I said to you, I brought it all the way back to the 1930s. What's changed in the last, 80, 90 years? Well, what's changed is the culture, the acceptability factor that the kids believe it's okay to do this. Now, you take a look at all of this. I want to talk to you. Dr. Ron, I know you study all this stuff with the kids, the psychological aspects of, I got to go here. I got to talk about the video games. I got to talk about Hollywood and entertainment because, quite frankly, I've seen the kids. They get so jacked up from coming out of the theaters where the blood and the guts and the killing and the whatever it is, it's the fast pace. Wow. And it's a big hit of that. When you're, 13, 15, 16, I don't think they're handling that well. And then again, these video games, I've seen them, and they are as gruesome as could possibly be. I never had those in my life, never played them, but I have seen them now. And I've seen my own son try to entertain himself with those, and I simply do not tolerate them, do not like them. I think this is a real problem. What do you think, Dr. Ron?
No, I absolutely agree with you. And just, I love this conversation about the culture because this is what we are breeding in America now. We are not training our children to accept failure and to accept rejection and to deal with failure and rejection and to deal with bullying. And as you said, these minds are just developing, so these kids can't place it into context. When you if you don't have that mentoring as a parent or as an adult mentor, and you don't teach the kids about failure and about rejection, then what happens is you allow them to become victims. The next thing is if we put in the component of going, like what Joe said, if these violent movies, these uber hyper-violent video games. And I think if a parent ever saw these games, they would just be abhorred.
Exactly.
But what it does is it desensitizes the person to violence. And I think Joe would agree with me. With active shooters, they kill anybody. They kill indiscriminately. And when I did the psychological profile of our Sutherland, Texas shooter, which is just down the road from our offices, we found that he killed infants, he killed little children, he killed handicapped people, and that is exactly what you see in the video games. They are just targets. They're not people. Now, in this case, we know that this was a revenge motive because he selected his victims. There were people that he liked that he did not target, and there were others that he shot indiscriminately. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that is an important factor here. And then when you go in to the suicidality, and Joe said something that's very important, and that is he felt helpless. Well, that's the suicidal ideation. People don't kill themselves just to commit suicide. The object of suicide is to end pain, end emotional or physical pain. And that's what he was going to do, but he just didn't have the guts to do it.
So when we're talking about the culture and what makes it acceptable, we had an incident here where a group of boys were molested by a sports coach in this area. And it came out many years later when the boys were 18, 19, 20 years old. Mm-hmm. And of course, there was a trial and all their names came out and these boys were humiliated. They were upset. They were damaged by this abuse years earlier. And one boy was so upset that he jumped in front of a train and he killed himself to stop the pain. Well, a short time later, another one of the boys killed himself. And a short time later, another boy jumped in front of a train and killed himself. So what we had is a cluster suicide, because if there are people in your life that you respect, you think are good people, and they choose suicide as a way to handle their problem, I believe at that point, then you say, you know, that is an option because my father did it, my mother did it, my cousin did it, this guy I respect did it. And when you combine that with that anger and that pain and they want to close it out, the culture has now told them, these are options for you to take.
Yeah.
And you know, Joe, it's interesting you bring up that case because I was asked to psychologically profile that case. Mm-hmm. So that's exactly right. And you know, for people that listen to America Out Loud, if you go to my show, A Thread of Evidence, the very first show that I did was on cyberbullying, and we talk about all these issues. So hopefully they'll go over to America Out Loud, they'll look up A Thread of Evidence, and they'll listen to that first show.
Ron, that was that couple, wasn't it?
That's exactly right.
David's legacy. Yeah.
David's legacy, yeah. In San Antonio. Yeah. And you know something, I have to admit to both of you, I did not, even though I'm a suicide investigator, I had not really been in tune with cyberbullying until I had those parents of that, that poor young man, a 16-year-old boy, David, that committed suicide because of this. And I'll tell you what, it really opened my eyes.
Yeah, yeah. I think as good adults, we're not doing a good job in this country. The video game movement, which is, again, I know these are billion-dollar enterprises. I know the Hollywood program of movies and killing and murder, mayhem, rape, blood, guts, glory. It's all sort of connected in this mindset where the kids think this is normal behavior. They really believe this is normal. They don't know the difference. So here's what I want to talk about now. I called yesterday on my news program for a national task force. I think it's time for a national task force that I think President Trump should call together. And I think this is where some of the best minds should come together. People like Dr. Ron Martinelli, people like Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and others. We should have some of the best minds on this topic in the room. And we should come through some of the problems and identify. This is time for a massive, I call it a whiteboard exercise, but you drill down and you come up with the answers. I think this is one area there needs to be a new mandate. I think before we come back to school, this next season, as we're now at the end of the school year, we're within, and not that we shouldn't, we should do something now, but this will take some time to develop. I think there needs to be a new series of action items. I think that, again, and I want to talk to you next about that, guys, about the schools, about securing the schools, securing the environment, because, listen, here's the thing. Think about it this way. During the 9/11 crisis, when the transportation system was upside down backwards, And they realized they couldn't protect the airport. We didn't know what was going to happen next. We were in a state of flux. And so what they did is that's when the whole system changed and we had to get more secure at all the airports. And everything changed overnight, totally overnight. But the way we thought changed overnight. But that's how we handled that problem. We took a look at the problem and then we had to do something about the problem. Yet here with schools, we're not doing anything. Every time there's an incident, it's just we talk about it and all these warm, cuddly feelings come out and nothing happens. And I'm telling you now, people, it's a matter of seconds, minutes, hours, days, weeks before the next one happens. So let's talk about this here, what to do now. This is the 9/11 of school shootings. This is time to now draw a line in the sand. What do we do next? What do you think about this national task force, Lieutenant Joe?
Well, I think it's a great idea if it's populated by people, and I don't mean to say this self-servingly, but like Dr. Ron and I, who are actually out in the field, in the schools, doing these things, not put up, politicians or somebody who's looking for to make a name for themselves, and actually look at the real events, the historical records, see what we can glean from it. And then, you know, the most dangerous statement anybody ever makes, and I see it all the time when I train, is, well, you know what, this is great and we should really tighten our schools up and prepare everybody. But you know what? It'll never happen here. Mm-hmm. Well, statistically, that's almost correct. It's very low. But I ask a question every time I go out to teach on this. I say, we know it's only a small number of places that it happens to. Somebody raise your hand and please tell me where the next one's going to take place, because I'm going to go show up there and be a hero. And I wait for people to think about it for a minute. And not one time in the last 9 years has anyone ever raised their hand to tell me. So the number may be low statistically. But if it happens at your school, it's 100%, and nobody knows where that's going to strike. We all have to be ready, and we have to take it seriously. Now, after an event like this, there's always talk about, oh, we got to do more at our school, and you'll start to see little bubbles here and there. Some districts will start to do something. But it needs this national attention that we have got to do something more.
It's time that President Trump, I think, does something about this problem, and that's what I would call for. And I have to say, Dr. Ron, it rattles the mind, as I say often. It just rattles the mind that we're not taking this more seriously and we're not doing something about it. Talk to me about this task force and what should happen next.
Well, sure. And I agree with everything Joe says, because we both deal with the schools. You know, before I was a law enforcement officer, I was a high school teacher. And then I've been, you know, an instructor, professor, you know, throughout my life. I've even been a division dean. And Joe will agree with me. The mentality that we have from school administrators and school teachers, for the most part, that whole mindset has to change. Okay, because Joe, you go to meetings, and I was in meetings as an administrator in a school, which was a college, and I tell you what, nothing ever got accomplished, because all they do is talk and talk and talk, and they kick that can down the road, and nothing ever happens, and there's a lot of politics, and there's a lot of liberal mindset and deflection and redirection, and nothing ever gets done. And so you really have to have the ground pounders, people like Joe and perhaps myself, involved in these things. And there has to be a time window where these things have to get accomplished. And so with a delineated line of objectives that have to be accomplished in a timeline,
exactly,
just like we did with 9/11, there has to be that resonance,
mm-hmm. Yep.
Because this is a national security issue. Mm-hmm. And then the whole the training aspect, which Joe and I are involved in, that really has to take place. And the funding for that has to become a reality. Let me give you just a quick example. Kids are mandated in every state of the union once a month to have a fire drill, okay? And they have fire drills every single month. They don't have active shooter drills, but let me ask you a question. How many kids have been killed by fire in the last 10 years in the United States? Well, the answer is none. How many kids have been killed in active shooters in the last 10 years, and we have almost 200.
That's right.
So where should a priority be?
Well, that's an excellent point, Dr. Ron. That is a fantastic point. And again, we're not putting the effort, the time, the energy, the money where the priorities really are. We are glorifying these situations. And I would ask all the media to refrain from putting the killer's face out there and the names and what have you, because the glorification of these evil-minded Satanist people that have gone astray, I think, as you're seeing with this last case in Santa Fe, Texas, has become, they're glorified. They're looking for the glorification. It is the revenge. It is the payback. Friends, it is time to change the rules of this game. If we don't change the rules, this game will never change. And it's time to get some passion behind this. Adults, the adults in the room, where are they? Stand up, be accounted for. It is only seconds, minutes, hours, and weeks before the next school shooting. And friends, if it's not your child and you don't have one in school, it could be your grandchild, it could be your cousin, it could be your friend, but somebody is going to be killed again, guaranteed. It's only a matter of time. It's a ticking time bomb in this country, and we are the laughingstock of the world. It is time to get a handle on this, people. Enough is enough. Big, big thank you to Lieutenant Joe Panghero and Dr. Ron Martinelli. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Just when things seem to be going along a little too well with Kim Jong-un, he released the three American prisoners. He agreed to Singapore, the meeting date, the summit, June 12th. And there was the other point of not requiring removal of American forces from South Korea. Remember, that was a sticking point prior as well. And then everything was looking very, very good. And then all of a sudden, it started to change. So what was behind this as we started to see some of the outcry, and we've seen this picture before, although things were looking, maybe we started to get convinced it would be a different picture this time. But so let's discuss that. I'd like to bring on here IQ Al Razuli is here. He's the author of Lifting the Veil. He's an Iraqi-born Arabic speaker, considered one of the foremost authorities in the world on the subject of Islam. Dennis Santiago is here. He's a global risk and financial analyst. His subject matter expertise includes strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. Gentlemen, North Korea. Wow. So the summit is supposedly June 12th, if that's going to happen. IQ, I want to ask you with this Kim Jong-un. Listen, one theory has it that he is probably hiding some of the nuclear weapons, moving things around, cleaning, tidying things up a little bit, if you will, trying to get things in play, because he really, that's their argument back, is they don't want to do this denuclearization. What's your theory on Kim Jong-un? Is he playing games at this point, or is there more to this story?
There is more, and I'll tell you why. On three radio stations I talked to this week, I said the error starts with John Bolton. I love John Bolton. I believe he's the best man to be with Donald Trump. But he was being interviewed by the news media, and he opened his mouth the wrong way. I'll tell you why. He used the Libya, Muammar al-Qaddafi, as an example. Huge mistake. What happened to Muammar al-Qaddafi? He gave away his weapons of mass destruction, and America stabbed him in the back and had him murdered. Mm-hmm. Kim knows that. Mm-hmm. This is why I believe what Donald Trump said in correcting John Bolton. He said, no, we want Kim to stay, and we shall make North Korea prosperous. That's what he wants.
Right.
That's
Yeah.
That's what I believe is the truth.
Yeah, yeah. That's a very good analysis, IQ, up front. And one of the, I was going to ask you about Gaddafi. There's a history of this. You're exactly right. I think it really does begin to, and if you realize, if you listen to the president the last several days, you're right. He was walking that back. You did notice his framework changing, how they wanted to, how they said, no, he's going to be fine. He's going to be fine. But listen, just a week ago, Secretary of State Pompeo was saying, yeah, we'll invest in North Korea. Yes, we'll spend some dollars there. Yes, we'll help their economy out. So clearly this was a sign. And of course, this man needs all of this. But at the end of the day, Dennis, he's not really trusting. I mean, Kim is not going to trust the West. And that's why you've had these meetings and these quick jaunts up to China there, where he's meeting with Xi Jinping and really going through the strategy of what happens next. And there's another strategy as well that George put out there, which he thinks that maybe China is looking to replace Kim Jong-un with a puppet. So pick up where IQ was a moment ago, Dennis, and let's talk about what's really behind. Could John Bolton have really thrown this off track with that comment, you think?
Oh, I think John Bolton, he's new. He's a Hawks hawk, and he's a part of the mix. I think there's also a lot of stuff going on inside of North Korea. You have a fairly large cadre of generals that have made their careers keeping this war going. You have the Chinese, and then you also have an interesting notation that kind of sits on the sideline of all this in terms of why get nervous about cleaning things up. The Iranians also threatened to expose all the dirty deals that had been going on surrounding the nuclear trade agreement with Iran, and Korea is involved in that, so that could also behind the scenes be causing a bit of shuffling going on back and forth as the Koreans try to go, well, you know, what's our position there? How do we clean that up? Do we need more time to make sure all that stuff is clean? We want to go into this deal because it's a lucrative deal for North Korea, exactly, if you really think about it. So, you know, getting into it with the best footing possible is good. There was a bit of a row because there was a military exercise that was scheduled. And so they used that as a basis for complaining. If you notice, the U.S. administration, in yet another act of holding out olive branches, basically said, okay, you know, well, tell you what, we'll take the heavy bombers out of that exercise. And because, you know, you never, those are the force projection elements of the U.S. military in that part of the world. They fly out from Guam. They were supposed to fly and exercise over Korea. We'll just take those out. So basically, it's now just local forces. And that's a lot less threatening to the North Koreans. And then, you know, it kind of dies down. So bottom line, I don't think that the North Koreans trust either the United States or China. And nor should they, because it's their country and it's their national interest. And but when all is said and done, very clearly, if you look at it, you know, they're still interested in making this deal.
Well, they don't have a lot of choice. I mean, their back is to the wall, really. I mean, as you say, economically and every other way. And of course, the radiation, the problems they've had out there, what's taken place there with their nuclear program. You know, IQ, he started to try to sell to his people how, you know, that they've accomplished everything they want to accomplish with their nuclear program. Now, we know that's a bunch of rubbish. The nuclear program has failed. The mountains collapse and the radioactive damage is serious. The polluted water supply is another problem. And, you know, and this is just miles from the Chinese border there. I mean, they cannot be real happy about this either out there. It's a bit reckless, the whole thing is. IQ, talk to us about, you know, let's say in the room there, Xi Jinping is in there with Kim Jong-un. What are your thoughts about that relationship about with China and North Korea? He's had a couple of these meetings already. There's probably even going to be another one, I would imagine, before they meet, if they meet, hopefully, on the 12th of June. What do you think's behind all this with China and North Korea? And what does China really want out of this?
China needs stability in North Korea. There's no question about it. They used North Korea for, what, 70 years? But now it's getting out of hand. And as you said, the nuclear program that they had has collapsed because of the problem they have with the mountain. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and I know, and everybody else who knows North Korea, the North Korean public, they don't exist. They exist only as numbers. They have no other knowledge of anything outside their programs on television, their own television. So to open up North Korea is a huge danger to the leadership. As Dennis said, you have generals with medals from the top of their head to the bottom of their trousers. They haven't fought a single war, but they have been entrenched for 70 years. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of problems for Kim himself within his own entourage. But I honestly believe they will meet, and I think they will have a good deal.
You do? Okay, all right. But here's the thing. Let me just, one follow-up to that, IQ. I hear what you say. That was my next question. Do they meet and what happens? And okay, so they do meet, you say, and they will be a deal. But really, here's the big question in the room, IQ, is will they hold to the deal? Will they follow? I mean, these people haven't been worth the word ever. What makes us think they're going to follow any deal? I mean, we can meet and have a kumbaya moment, but how do we really hold Kim Jong-un to the fire here and to be of his word?
Simple. Because as Donald Trump said, we shall verify. And Kim knows that Trump is not any like any of other presidents. Kim knows. President Trump, before he was elected, he said, we shall move the embassy to Jerusalem. And he did, in spite of the United Nations and everybody else against him. He said, we shall stop the Iranians from becoming nuclear. And he said he will do it. And there is no way on earth he will allow them to continue with it.
Dennis, same question I want to ask you about. Does the summit happen on the 12th of June? Is there a deal in place? And is the deal worth anything?
Oh, yeah. I think clearly they are trying to get to this summit. They have substantive things that they want to get done. You know, Pompeo's gone over there a couple of times. And they've also had delegation meetings with the South Koreans, which means, you know, they got their hopes up. Among other things, you know, the North Koreans are about to run out of money. Nobody's about to give them any more. And here's this deal that says, hey, you know, economic wealth follows in the aftermath of behaving. That's a very attractive thing to them. I mean, you know, if you look at North Korea's history for all these years, they make noise and then they try to basically demand money from people in the United States, and past administrations has been happy to pay it. This is like even better, and all they have to do is behave. You know, they don't have to throw tantrums.
All they have to do is behave. That's got a little bit, right?
Yeah, and you know, and so the thing is, now the question that I think is important for North Korea, and I think they're searching their souls on it, is what is the cost of behaving to their culture? And I mean, you know, their power-based culture. It is not going to be an easy thing for them.
Okay.
And that is the bottom line of what's going on. As far as the world is concerned, it's going to be substantive. As far as Asia is concerned, it's going to be substantive.
Well,
for the Koreans, it's going to be a soul-searching moment.
And it is. And it is. That's very well said, a soul-searching moment. And yeah, I mean, soul-searching survival, life, your economy, all the things that these people need. It is very interesting the way the cards are playing out on this. We are in for a landmark moment, whatever happens. Listen, I want to talk about to Israel and what's happened there in Gaza here. So Israel celebrated its birthday, Independence Day, as a nation on May 14th. And of course, Hamas, they had the 6 weeks, the March of Return, and they used it as an excuse for demonstration attempts to breach the border with Israel. And of course, they had, we don't really know the number, but somewhere between 50, 60, 70,000 and 100 potentially all over the border there. And of course, it's there are five main areas on the border that became very much hot spots that they were trying to break through, wire cutters, all kinds of devices. And I always think that we should take our children, our babies and our children, to the line of fire. And it's a great thing to bring them into war, IQ. I think it's a beautiful thing. We should have all the kids in war, you know, potentially here. I mean, yet the media can't seem to figure this out. It's just, again, rattles the mind. Explain to me, because you are so eloquent at this conversation, I know. You're a little passionate about this one. What happened there, and what happens next?
It's very simple, honestly. The worst enemy of Israel is not the Muslims or the Arabs, because the Muslims and the Arabs have declared publicly again and again and again that their purpose is single, the extermination of Israel. So the Israelis know where they stand. The worst criminals are the Europeans and the news media. There is no other solution. I mean, there's no other explanation. But the criminality of the news media and the Europeans is beyond belief and beneath contempt. Today in the United Nations, only one country out of 192 stands by Israel. That's America. Only the USA. The Europeans again and again and again sided with the Muslims and the Arabs. The very Muslims and the Arabs who are destroying Europe as we speak. Now, how is it possible for any decent human being watching television, watching what's happening on the border, watching women taking their children and an 8-month baby to the front line? You see, Hamas uses women and children and they hide behind them. The Israelis, the IDF, stands in front of their women and children to defend them. And yet the news media and the public and the United Nations side with the enemy of Israel. I can't explain it to you. I've never been able to explain. Only hatred or utter insanity can explain it.
Wow.
How can you explain it? You tell me, please.
IQ, that is, no, you put it right out there. And I really appreciate that, because you're spot on. I mean, I can't explain it either. Again, it's beyond comprehension how any group, I mean, there is only one. It's evil. It's pure Satanism. And it's the terrorist group that they are. And there is no sanctity of life there. And so, you know, the soldiers stepped back. The Hamas soldiers, IQ's right. I want you to understand, people, what happened here. The soldiers were behind the citizens. They put the citizens up front to take the fire. Now, of course, that didn't really happen. Again, no credit's really been given to Israeli forces here. And they specifically, some of the best shooters and snipers specifically targeted, most of the people that were killed were the Hamas soldiers and stuff, not the civilians. So you got to give some, nobody's given credit there, because as IQ says, it is a total propaganda in the way the media is. And you know, Dennis, he puts out there two things. I like what he says here, because he called the media out, and he's right when he says, listen, we know what they're saying. It's not real complicated. These people have already said they want to wipe Israel. I mean, this is not a secret to anybody on the planet. I mean, come on. Nobody can deny that. So really, he called out the media and he called out Europe. Well, I got to tell you what, those are two central pieces of evidence in this fight for freedom.
Well, let's start with the media in Europe. So Europe has been trying to import bodies from the Middle East for quite some time now, and they have gotten themselves embroiled in a mess that I think they did not fully understand.
They still don't.
I mean, you know, and it will take some time to understand. You bring in immigrants in mass into a country that or a part of the world, the European Union, which is primarily pretty insular. You know, that's the part of the world where, you know, people live in the same house for 400 years. That's Europe. And they brought all these people in, and they don't understand that it's going to take 35 years for that immigration wave to work its way through. We understand it in the United States. We've seen wave after wave here. The Europeans, this is a shock to their system. Media is here, and they, you know, they're just looking to get stuff on airtime. And quite honestly, the media covering the Middle East are the laziest people I have ever seen. There is so much stuff going on there that is newsworthy that they ignore, and then they pay attention to the things that basically have the best PR people coming to them as they sit in their cubicles waiting for news to come to them. What do they cover? They cover Hamas. You know what? The Palestinians hate Hamas. Everybody hates Hamas. There is no country in the Middle East that thinks well of that group of thug warlords.
This illusion of peace out there, it really is going to be an illusion, isn't it? It's I mean, what's the plan moving forward?
You can't make peace with somebody who wants you dead. There will not be any peace. And I'll tell you what, God willing, when enough Europeans wake up and overthrow the governments in Europe, the Arab-Israeli war will change completely. That confrontation will change completely. Wow.
Fantastic analysis from both of you. IQ, Al Razuli, Dennis Santiago. You hear it here, folks. I mean, it's what I call the out loud truth. I mean, you may not like it, but it is the truth. And that's what this whole thing is about, friends. Up next, whether we like it or not, yeah, it's the Mueller investigation. 1 year and just a few days in, and this thing is still going on. It's like that Energizer rabbit. It just keeps going and going and going. Somebody pull the batteries the hell out of that thing, will you? More Viewpoint in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Okay, so it is the 1 year anniversary in a few days and a few hours and seconds, I'm sure, for the 1 year anniversary of Special Counsel Robert Mueller. And I know you're all excited about this and always look forward to this part of the news program, as I'm sure we all are, probably over. This is the one investigation I think we all wish would end for the country's sake and for everybody's sake. It's been far too long here. We'll take that on next, friends. The 1 year anniversary here. George McClellan is here. He's a historian and political analyst. His professional career spans 43 years in law enforcement and the U.S. Naval Investigative Service. And Ava Armstrong is here. She's a political commentator, radio personality, and author. Ava writes about the everyday men and women, military law enforcement, focus on patriotism. And listen, if you're going to have a conversation about Mueller, I figured let's get the firepower out here. We'll get George and Ava and see if we can't slash this thing. So, all right, so it's been just over a year, guys, since the start of this witch hunt, as the president calls it here, basically. There still doesn't seem to be, I mean, we're not seeing anything specifically that says anything from anybody, but there are a lot of interesting pieces happening here, and the question is what happens next. Ava, as you look at this thing right now, this special counsel with all the moving targeted pieces now of Horowitz, the Inspector General report, a lot of what Devin Nunes and Trey Gowdy are trying to pull off here, what's happening on the flip side with all this other business, you know, and I say other business meaning the Cohen piece back that side, you know, that Mueller kind of threw off. What do you think is the most interesting piece of this investigation right at this moment of time as we look at the 1 year anniversary?
Well, the fact that Mueller has not one scintilla of evidence that Donald Trump has obstructed justice. In fact, most of the evidence is pointing toward the Democrats and their collusion to not allow Trump to come into office. And then once he was in office, to try to oust him. And it's not just the Democrats. There's a group of Republicans who are particularly deplorable, in my opinion. They're doing some things behind the scenes that are really disgusting, in my opinion.
Yeah. You know, I want to challenge you on something you say there with special counsel, because the scintilla of evidence, but really and rightfully so, should we really have any evidence at this point? I mean, typically with a special counsel, really any investigation, Ava, you really don't get the information, you don't get the details, you don't get the insight, you don't get the bottom line until they're ready to talk to you. So might he have something that we really don't know about because he hasn't released it yet?
Well, let me put it this way. Even if he has something, President Trump's protected by Article 2. So he cannot be charged with a crime while he's in office. number one. And he could be charged when he leaves office. So, you know, we have to really look at the absurdity of this whole investigation right from the get-go, okay?
Well, listen, the only thing they can do, though, George, back to picking up Ava's point here, is they can, sure, Article 2, I get it, but they can impeach the president. Of course, it would have to be the House would have to do that, but that is the one thing, you know, versus charging him when he's out of office kind of thing. Because, again, yeah, you know, you really can't be charging a sitting president with all kinds of, you know, distractions. He's got to run the country, supposedly. Yes, what they say, George. What do you think, George? What's the most interesting thing you think, picking up where Ava says here with this investigation? Anything there?
Yes. What's interesting is that no one turns their eyes to the Clinton Foundation. They were under investigation once. There was a grand jury impaneled once. And when you examine all the details as far back as 2001, 18 years ago, 17 years ago, you'll find the development of a RICO scheme that came to front into public scrutiny simply because Hillary Clinton did not win the presidency. Everybody went into a panic and are exposed for their perfidy. They're criminals. The FBI leadership, not the agent corps, but the leadership, was compromised as early as Arkansas when Bill Clinton and Hillary were governors of that state. It's a very tawdry organization here that's trying to protect itself. It is the deep state protecting itself.
George, when you say the deep state protecting themselves, and a lot of people suspect that, had Hillary Clinton won the election, boy, what a turn of events that would have been. Really, it's obvious.
Never heard any of this.
We would have never heard any of this. That's right. Yeah, this all would have been flushed away. It would have been gone and lost forever. What do you think, George, about this IG report with Horowitz? Is this going to be the real aha moment, or is this just another letdown for the right?
Well, that's a good question. It hasn't been exposed to the public yet. I suspect that the fellow who was the IG did his job truthfully and honestly. I would be shocked if he hadn't, because he does not appear in any of these alleged conspiracies to defeat Trump. But he's just a man doing his job, and he's already let out enough to condemn Comey to a trial, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, Comey can be charged. At least Comey can be charged. You know, the FBI, the agent corps, needs vindication. They need somebody. They need some mechanism to reestablish their legitimacy as a law enforcement agency, now the political machine that helps the Marxists. This report might start that process.
Yeah, you know, I wonder, George, many of us think about this James Comey piece. I mean, he really did it into himself with this whole book tour and on all the media, all of the, which is very unusual for a law enforcement guy and somebody who's supposed to be as intellect as he has put himself out to be. It is a big surprise that he took the gamble or the chance.
Have you noticed how silent James Comey has suddenly become?
Yeah, why do you think that is, Ava?
How quickly his book tour ended.
Right. The advice of counsel.
Well, I've studied Horowitz, I wanted to mention. Okay. He has a very interesting background with, he was an Obama appointee, and he has an interesting dynamic with former President Obama. He called Obama many times on the carpet, and I don't think there was any love lost between those two. So I am thinking that Horowitz just might be the man for this job.
Wow.
He may be the man for the moment. So there's a glimmer of hope there.
So you don't think it's just a fairy tale? You think his report's going to be, I mean, you're confident, or you seem confident, it's going to be the real thing, you think, huh?
And I'm also very confident in Huber, the Utah prosecutor that's also working very quietly behind the scenes. And none of this has been revealed yet to anybody. It's been very closely held.
Yeah, talk about that a moment, Ava, and talk to us more about this Huber and what you're speaking about. Because you're right, there has been very, very little talked about on that. What do you know about that?
Well, the Inspector General, Horowitz, does not have the power to prosecute.
That's right.
Okay.
Right.
He has investigating powers
only.
And he's using that far and wide. Mm-hmm. But his information is going to Huber for prosecutorial stuff. So, and like I said, we have you know, Huber has been extremely silent. There's been no leaks about that. So it will be very interesting to see this roll out in the next couple of weeks. You know, when it hits in June, it's going to be very interesting.
George, this whole sideshow that's been going on here with this, well, I mean, listen, I mean, this whole Avenatti deal, this pimp here that's got the porn queen's job here, Stormy Daniels, and I mean, almost the numbers here are pretty startling here, but they're approaching now about 200 appearances to try to pull the president down. You know, a very interesting question I have for you, George. Is there any possibility this man has had such free press and free reign in all of his publicity? They've raised a lot of money, over $500,000 they've raised with this sort of GoFundMe kind of page to pull the president down. This was all about money, it appears to be. Who is he really working for, this Avenatti dude, do you think? I mean, is he potentially, is he a puppet of somebody, do you think? Or is he just a moneymaker, capitalist, entrepreneur?
Yeah, well said. He's an ambulance chaser. That's it. That's the level of the level of his law goes. And this was an opportunity, mm-hmm. and he's exploiting it. He's clumsy. It will not work.
I think his funding is coming from the Obama campaign, the Obama camp. I really do. I'm convinced of it. Mm-hmm. He was a Rahm Emanuel person. He worked for Rahm Emanuel in the past. He has close ties to the former Obama group of people. Mm-hmm. It would not surprise me at all to see that Obama is somehow funding him through a foundation, of course.
Well, the one-year anniversary, how much longer does this go on? Let's just take a quick go-around with all of us and guess. Ava, what would you say that this thing, I mean, here we are in May. When do you think this thing becomes part of history?
Well, it depends on if Rudy Giuliani and Trump sit in a room with Mueller, which is being talked about as we speak. And now, you know, Mueller is saying he's going to narrow his scope of right. questions. I don't want Trump to sit down with him at all. I think, you know, Trump doesn't owe him mm-hmm. anything. So I would just, you know, as a person who knows a little bit about law, I would say do not sit in a room with him.
Right. A lot of people would agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't care how long it goes on. I mean, eventually this Inspector General report will come out and Huber will come out. And I think the whole thing is going to shift.
Yeah. Yeah. George, last word on this. Do you think the president can and will sit down with him or what?
No, you don't need to. You owe him nothing. Let him figure out his own way out of the box, because that's where he is now. He's in a box. He's got nothing, so what's he going to do?
Yeah, right.
I think we have five months to answer the first question.
5 months left.
October, always a surprise in October.
So you think this goes to October, so just before the election, you're thinking in November then, George?
Yes, of course.
Wow, so you think it could be done before the election? That would be interesting, because they're trying to hang this out to pass the election.
They're going to drag it on and hope something will come up just before the election.
Well, listen, big thank you to George McClellan, Ava Armstrong, and really all of our guests today. Viewpoint this Sunday will always deliver an honest analysis and opinions on all sides of the political aisle. While we don't discriminate against an opinion, the main thing is we are always in search of the out loud truth.